All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another great edition of Business with Roy. As usual, I'm your host, Hende. I'm joined by the great, the fantastic, the legendary Roy Red. Roy, how are you doing this evening?
Man, what's good, Hende? It's morning where I'm at right now. Just getting my day started, replying to emails, and excited for episode 2. Bring back some value, see if we could bring some heat, get you guys to make some money.
Of course, I'm excited as well. I've been getting some good feedback, so let's keep the momentum going of the show. Now, recently, I'm talking about yesterday, we had an American in the country, a very famous American, that is none other than Mr. iShow Speed. He was here causing pandemonium in the streets, I would say the least. I mean, he shut down our city center. Had never seen anything like that. You familiar with the young man iShow Speed?
Very familiar. He's huge. I would say he's probably the top streamer right now. And, you know, a lot of streamers do a lot of crazy things to get attention because we're living in an attention economy, but he is just generally, seems like a good guy, and he's just fun to watch, right? I like to watch his videos where he races people, and maybe one day I could get a chance to race him because I think I might be able to get him.
You think he could beat Speed?
I think I can get him. Yeah.
It'd be cool. I'd love to see that.
But I could get him. I'm fast.
Okay. We'll try and make that happen one day. Maybe when Speed comes back, you'll join him in the streets for a race.
I'll beat him in my suit.
Now, the reason I bring up Speed is because obviously he's an example of what this digital world can do. He's made, I would say maximum use of the internet. I mean, only black YouTuber to have 50 million subscribers. Mm-hmm. And as much as, his whole premise is to have fun. Obviously, all of this is a business to him as well. This is how he makes money.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was here yesterday, you could see his crew around him. There's like his manager. There's a couple of people in the background. You can see like they're here to work, like, you know?
Yeah.
While Speed is doing his thing. So I want to hear from you, like, what is the way that Speed makes use of digital tools? How does this translate in the world of business?
It's huge. There's kind of a couple levels to it, right? And I'll give you a little quick story before I break down how huge it is. And 2019, 2020, I was doing maybe 40, 50 speaking engagements. And for me to come talk on your stage for 45 minutes, it's anywhere from 7,000 to 15,000. And so, COVID happened. I lost that. And that was a lot of money, but I didn't have a digital footprint like I should have had because I wasn't, on top of it like I should. But you gotta be, if you have a business, no matter what it is, if it's a service-based business, if it's a home shop, if you're selling services and products online, you need to have a solid online presence. Even if you're not going to go viral, even if you're not going to be organic, you'll be surprised how many people watch. For example, I'll have my show, I'll post my clips. I'll get maybe 5 likes and only 300 views. But then when I go out into the world, people are like, hey, I saw this clip or I saw that clip. People are watching more than you think they are. They're watching. And especially when because we talked in the last episode about cold outreach and calling people and doing outreach. After people talk to you, they're going to go see what you've done online. They're going to Google you. When someone Googles you, what's there? They're going to look you up. They're going to see what you've done. And you want to make sure that you have two things on your digital footprint. You want people to know who you are, what you do. But the two things you want is you want you educating to show that you know what you're doing. And then you also want videos of you demonstrating. So yes, I talk on leadership. I talk on business. I talk on syntax and communication and psychology. But then also they want to see me on stage. They want to see me. Yeah, I posted a little video of me setting up this, the show and getting ready to talk to you. People want to see that you're actually doing what you do. Because then they can follow you and then they can model you and follow your patterns because that's how we learn, right? You can learn from listening, seeing, or doing. I'm fortunate where I can learn all three ways, but you want to put information out there so people can learn from you whichever way they like to look at your content.
100%. And I actually wanted to know, in your line of work, is online presence a factor in whether or not you acquire a business?
Yes. It's not super huge. It's like not someone's not going to see my videos and then go, oh, can you buy my business? Well, here's how it happens. I'll give you an exact thing that happened to me recently. Right now, we are in talks of doing an option to buy a service-based business in Tennessee. And the owner, let's call him Bob. Bob, we started talking. I emailed him and we've been talking over weeks, and actually we have a meeting after this podcast. But he looked me up on Google and watched a 2-hour long podcast of mine that I did with my CFO. And he was like, oh, I saw your CFO and I saw what you guys were talking about and I see what you do. So he went and looked me up, and then that made him know that I'm a legit person. I'm not spamming him. I'm not doing anything fraudulent. I'm a legit person. And he only knew that because he went to look me up. So if you don't have a digital footprint, you're going to lose deals and lose sales because people are going to go look for you. They're going to look for reviews. They're going to see if you know what you're talking about. And if you're not there, you could lose money.
Mm-hmm. No, I actually meant if the businesses that you buy, do you look for them to have a online presence or not?
Oh, okay. They should have one because it will bring them more sales. But here's the cool thing about what I do. Anything that they aren't doing to increase value on sales helps me because I can buy it cheaper, and after I buy it, I can make more money. So the first thing we're going to do when we buy a company, the first thing we're going to do is start doing content. If we're doing, let's say, the plumbing, I'm going to see if there's a way I can get the plumbers to start doing content on their plumbing so that we can post that on YouTube, because YouTube, it's really get high in SEO, which is search engine optimization. And if people are looking for someone in their area, it's going to pop up. That YouTube video is going to pop up in their area above everything. And then they're going to see you. And what do we do, Hende, whenever we're going to buy something? If we're going to buy a computer or anything, we binge watch the content, right? We'll watch 3, 4, 5 videos on it. And then we'll decide to buy it based on that. But then we made the decision to buy from the person who taught us. So that's one thing about school. Education is marketing. And so it helps us when they don't, honestly, because we can buy it cheaper and then we can make more money because we're going to implement all that stuff. And then if they did implement it, they're probably going to be more expensive and making more money. And that helps us as well. So a lot of these businesses that we buy, they're older people, though. They're 50, 60, 70. They aren't online yet. You can make money by arbitraging, helping them find clients by going in and helping them get an online presence. Or what we do is we buy them and then we create an online presence. Then we put in AI systems. If you aren't using technology for your benefit, you're just leaving money on the table.
100%. Do you have an example of a business you acquired where once you acquired them, you boosted their online presence?
Yes. So,
and in turn made more money?
I don't know if we made more money because of it, but it was a home health business we bought in 2022, and we started to put out content. Now, you can't put out crazy content because you can't show other people that are in, that you're helping in the business, especially in healthcare. There's HIPAA violations and things of that sort where you can't share people's information. But if I have a mother who's 80 and I want to get her home health, I want people who are compassionate and going to be patient with my mother, right? And so if I go and I look up 5 home health companies near me, and I see one that's putting out content where they're being nice, they're being patient, they're taking care of the people, I'm probably going to go with them before I go with anyone else because it's going to build trust. And there's actually a number. Google did data where if people watch, if they see you on 3 different platforms and they see and you make 11 contacts with them, 11 in different ways from different platforms, and they watch you for 7 hours, that builds trust.
Mm. Now, that's a very interesting insight there. Touching back onto, you know, the pandemonium that speed caused.
Yeah.
Since you started doing this, have you had any, maybe not viral, but what's been your most successful, like, piece of online content, you would say?
So there's a big, blog out here called Hollywood Unlocked, Uncensored. And I went on their podcast a few years back, and I maybe had, 600 followers. And after going on that podcast, I shot to 15,000 followers. And that wasn't my audience, but attention is still attention. And that was kind of the first time. I didn't really go viral, but I got a lot of eyeballs. And that's when I really saw the power of the internet. I had people who were making fun of me. You know, I have big teeth. People were like, oh, who's this guy with horse teeth and rabbit teeth? There was girls in there like, oh, he's fine. And, that's the one thing you have to realize about the internet is you really have to be secure with yourself and allow people to have their opinions and not let it bother you and put yourself out there. It's okay. If people say things about you, that's fine. Just put yourself out there, because at the end of the day, even though people are going to say what they're going to say, you'll make more money.
Yes. And so now when you went from the 600 to 15,000, were you ready for that jump in eyeballs?
I was, but it was a different audience. So, you know, the blogs are like TMZ. Do you know what TMZ is? So Hollywood Unlocked is like TMZ. So that wasn't my audience at the time. I was doing a lot of speaking at the time, a lot of writing, and I was coaching athletes and CEOs on mindset stuff and, confidence and things of that sort. I would say I probably got maybe one client from that, because they saw me, but it did bring a lot of attention. And here's the thing too, you know, I have more followers now. There's a thing in business called positioning, and positioning is if you go to an hospital, you know how you see a doctor and you're like, that's a doctor. And so you want to listen to them, and they have this authority because they have the white coat. That's positioning. So books position you, but online positions you as well. You're more positioned as the authority, as the expert, as the influencer in a space if you have more followers. So having more followers and more engagement at that time did give me more higher positioning. And positioning is basically just your perception in the customer's mind, in the market's mind.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of positioning, how would you describe where you've positioned yourself now, if you could put that into words? And is where you think you are now, has that always been the plan?
So that's a good question. It hasn't always been the plan. My plan was to write books and speak all over the world and make millions of dollars. 2020 made that a lot harder. And there's a lot more so-called experts in the world now, where it's the market is really flooded. It's when a business is in vogue, and vogue is means a lot of people are starting to do it. You kind of want to transition and move away, or you want to create what's called a category of one USP, unique selling proposition. So for example, if I do psychology and mental things to make people stronger, the best in the world at that is Tony Robbins, right? So how can I distinguish myself from Tony Robbins? Because he's the best. Why would you go to me if you can go to Tony Robbins, right? And so you want to distinguish yourself and make sure that you are different than everyone else when you put out your messaging for your business. But I didn't imagine that I was going to be selling businesses. But it's funny how God has this way of preparing you with the things you're doing now for what you're going to be doing later. Because it taught me how to talk. It taught me how to sell. It taught me how to use psychology. And it taught me how to not get bothered. Today I got an email where I did some email outreach and someone put, stop, you're spamming me, calling me names and whatever. Sorry. We will stop contacting you and you move on. And, it learned and it taught me to deal with rejection. So all of that gave me the skill to do what I'm going to do today. And, it wasn't part of the plan. You know, they say when man plans, God laughs. But I think God really had a plan for me and he led me down this road.
That's a great saying. I never heard that one. So now in the, like you alluded to, in the search to be different online, because you know, there's millions and millions of people online. We've seen in the big corporate world where when these companies sometimes try to be different, or sometimes with individuals as well, they try to be different and, you know, they just post something that's totally, whether it's tone deaf or just completely insensitive. And then that inevitably sometimes completely tanks the business. Have you had any experience with, whether it's maybe with yourself or a business you acquired or looking to acquire, where you saw something online and it was just, it had a negative impact? Do you have any experience with that?
Yes. I've lost speaking engagements and I've never lost deals, but I've lost speaking engagements because of some of my political views. Here in America, especially ever since Trump has been on the scene, people are real sensitive about other people's opinions, which it really bothers me, because anyone should be able to have their opinion. It's fine. As long as you're not taking away or infringing on someone's freedom, they should be able to say what they want to say. And so, I've also been, shadow banned on Instagram when Biden was president. You know, you would say certain things and I was shadow banned for about a year. I would get, I don't know, 10,000, 11,000 views and 100 comments. And that went away because of some of the things that I believed or what I said, you know, and, that isn't the American way, and things are getting better, but you have to be mindful of what you say. And if you're okay with maybe losing, friends at, here in America, you lose friends over your opinions. You'll say something.
I've seen families fight over political opinions.
I fight with my family. My family is predominantly more left and I'm more conservative and more right. But my family is very mature. We can debate and then that's the end of it. And I'm fortunate to have really smart family members who can do that. But some friends, I lost a really good friend because I had some opinions on the military and he was in the military and he didn't appreciate it. And we don't talk at all anymore. And so I think that's very immature, but that is the reality of the world we live in. And so, if you're going to have a brand, you need to weigh the differences. Do you feel so strongly about this that you're willing to lose money? And there's certain things that I do feel strongly about where I'm willing to lose money, right? And if you don't want to lose any money, then you got to know your market and just say what they want to hear. Either or is great, but you do need to be mindful that some things people are going to take the wrong way and you could lose money and lose deals. And that speaking engagement I lost, we're about to close the deal for the engagement. It was a $10,000 talk. And then she just said, oh, we decided not to move forward. And then she didn't even talk to me. Why? Right. And so, you know, I think we should grow up and not worry about what people's opinions are online. But at the same time, do you know why, Hende, they say don't judge a book by its cover? Because everybody judges a book by its cover. Everybody does that. And so in psychology, actually, in the first 5 seconds that someone meets you, they already made their decision of how they feel about you. And then all they do after that is they're looking for things to verify the decision they already made. So when you're meeting people and I teach this stuff, you got a 5 second window to look and be and act in a way that they like. And then after that, you're good. But if you don't meet that 5-minute window, people will hate on you. And they don't even know that they made the decision within the first 5 seconds. It's a subconscious decision that happens in a mammalian brain for survival. And, you know, I wish people could think through and actually watch, but that's just not how people are.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that, especially on the not letting opinions, especially on like things that are quite trivial sometimes, letting it divide people, I think is quite an unfortunate thing that happens in our society. But, I want to talk about, kind of continuing on to that best practices for someone that, wants to grow their presence online and in turn grow their business online. What are some good, good practices to follow?
Yeah. You want to follow the M's: market, messaging, model. And here's kind of how that do. First, you got to know your market. Who are the people who are going to buy what you're selling? One way to find out about your market is to go see who's selling the thing that you're selling and see their market and see their messaging. So once you know who the market is, and that's just the people who buy what you're buying, then you want to go to where they are. What do they read? What do they watch? What platform are they on? For example, me, I buy businesses, so they're predominantly on LinkedIn, right? So I make sure I focus a lot on LinkedIn. So once you know your market, you want to know where they are. You don't want to be saying, I sell cold water and you're in a hot climate. I mean, cold water and you're in a cold climate. You have to know where you're selling. So after that, you want to know the messaging. What is the messaging that resonates with that market? One of my guys in my mastermind group, his messaging is very right-wing conservative, but his messaging is that way because his market is fishermen, and people who fish are very right-wing and conservative in America. It's market, message, and then model. And model is, how are you going to deliver your product? How much is your product going to be? You want to make sure you know, for example, there's a lot of people who like to sell high ticket items. So why are you trying to sell high ticket items to people who only make 6 figures a year? You need to be getting in front of people who make 7-8 figures a year, people who can afford it. So market, message, model, and then you want to get your price right to where, that they can afford it and they see value in it. You want to create your avatar. That's the exact person that you're selling to. Is it woman? Is it men? What do they look like? Here's the key, Hende. If you can enter a conversation that these people, your customer, is already having in their head, then you can sell anything. And you can't do that unless you know your market. And then you dial in your message.
Excellent, excellent. Now that's a good acronym to remember, the 3 M's. I hope the listeners wrote that one down. Now, as a best-selling author, 6-time best-selling author, I assume most of your sales come online, right?
Yes, for the books.
How has that been for you? Like any challenges with that? And maybe if you can share, like, how does that work to when it comes to now orders, like the influx of orders, how does that work?
So I actually published through Amazon. Do you guys have Amazon in Namibia?
Yeah, we're slowly getting it here.
Oh yeah, Amazon. Okay. So Amazon bought, the big publishing houses like Barnes and Nobles, anywhere where you publish your books. So I wrote the book and then I published it on Amazon, and then Amazon automatically distributes it around the world. Okay. Now I'm really good at launching books. There's a way to make any book a bestseller. I can work with anyone. You could come to me. We could sit down after you write your book. I can make it a bestseller guaranteed. I know the structure. I know exactly how many books you need to sell. I know how you can sell those books without even spending any marketing money. So then once you're in the algorithm in Amazon, Amazon will then push your book out, even further, right? And so, what we do is we do a book launch. We did a book launch, and in that book launch, we just got a bunch of sales in a certain amount of time because Amazon goes based on a 24-hour period, and then you can become a bestseller in that 24-hour period. So right now, my book, if you looked at it on Amazon, it won't have the bestseller sticker, but if I sold, let's say, 100 books today, it'll have that sticker, and that changes every day. So what we do is we push all the sales that we do the book launch in a short period of time so that way we get that sticker. Once it says bestseller, we screenshot that, and then we send that to our list. I send that to my list of my emails. I send that through text. We blast it out. We send it to social media. Thank you. You guys made us a bestseller. And then people, you know, people see, oh, he's a bestseller. Then they go get it. That brings more sales. And then Amazon sees, oh, people are looking at this. They're buying it. They're writing reviews. Let's serve it up to more people. And then they start showing it to more people in that genre.
No, that's interesting. I had no idea that, that it works like, so time-based, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. There's a skill.
And, I want to go back to speed. Cause, you know, his whole thing is obviously quantity, right? 50 million subscribers or like having 100,000 people watching live at once. But online, there's something that a lot of people don't, consider sometimes is it's not always how many people are watching you. It's like which people are watching you, right?
Yes.
Especially in business. Sometimes it doesn't really matter if a million people are watching you if no one is
buying
what you're selling, basically.
Yep.
So how does a person, a business owner now in particular, make sure that their audience is the people that are going to spend money with them?
Have they bought what you're selling before? That's the key. So if I'm selling, let's say I'm a life coach, you need to get in front of people who bought life coaching before. So here's what I would do. And this is how anyone can make money right now. Think about something you're selling online. Let's say it's an educational thing. And I'm going to just say life coaching. I'm going to say, let's go fitness life coach.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you can find a Facebook group. You can find a LinkedIn group of people who have already followed the top guys that are in what you're selling. So I will say, okay, I'm right here in this niche. This is the market. Who owns this niche? So in business buying and business selling, there's a woman named Cody Sanchez. She's the top in selling how to buy businesses and how someone could buy service-based businesses. So here's what you can do. You can go to, there's plenty of ways you can scrape her audience. You can use a tool called Phantom Buster. You can use so many tools. You can get her Instagram and scrape all her followers and then run ads to her followers. Or you can run messages or cold emails to them. If you find the people who are already watching that and already paying for it, then all you have to do is get in front of them. And if you have a online presence where you're delivering education and they can see that you're good, then you can, for lack of better words, steal her market, some of her market, and bring them towards your direction.
So what you're saying is it's better to find people who already have bought what you're selling instead of trying to convert someone to buying what you're selling for the first time.
Exactly. And that's what we call a warm lead. You have cold leads, warm leads, and hot leads. A cold lead is someone you have to teach them and cajole them and try to get them to want to buy something. And they may not know what it is. They may not be ready. It's like trying to tell someone who doesn't know what Bitcoin is that they should buy your crypto, right? And then you have your warm leads. That's people who are educated on it already. They're already thinking about it. They're already following those people, watching those people, consuming that education of those people. Those are warmer leads. And so you want to get in front of people who are ready to make a buying decision. And the way to do that is, have they bought it before? You know what I mean? And another thing you can do is, what event happens in someone's life before they buy your product, right? So in fitness, they found that when someone has a breakup from a relationship, they're most likely going to soon buy some kind of fitness product to get in shape. So you can crush the game with that. People who just had a breakup, and reach out to them. But if you know where they are and you know that they bought it before and you know what event happens before they make a buying decision, then you just need to be in the right place at the right time. If you're the only guy with cold water and it's 100 degrees outside, you're going to sell out.
Yeah. Now, Roy, I want you to talk about some tools that help you with your online presence outside of now the obvious, like the platform itself. What are some additional tools that you use, whether it's like last time you spoke about, that platform that helps you blast out emails? Is there any other tools people can make use of to improve their online presence?
Yeah. So you have data tools to find out where the leads are. Like you can scrape. You can use an app called a software called Appify, and they have what's called a Google Map Scraper. Okay. So if you sell to businesses, if you're a young hustler and you're going to create an AI chatbot for a business and take a percentage of the money they bring in from that chatbot, you can do this. You can go to Appify, pull up the Google Map Scraper, and scrape all the businesses in your area. Get their names and emails, and then you can go to a cold email campaign. You can use Lemlist, you can use Instantly, or you can use SmartLead. And what those are is you can get multiple emails, and then you can blast to all those businesses, "Hey, my name is Roy. I make AI chatbots that will increase your revenue by 30%. I will make your chatbot for free and just take a percentage of the revenue of the people who come through the chatbot." Boom. That's such a good selling proposition because they pay no money, and then you make money when they make a sale, right? And if you get, let's say each business makes $500 a month for you. Now, if you're going to make $10,000 a month, all you need is 20 of those that are constantly bringing in deals from the chatbot. That's $10,000 a month. You could do that with a chatbot. You can also do that with a website. If you can go to Appify, scrape them, and then look at their websites and tell them, "Hey," and say this in a better way, but you could say, "Hey, your website is a little average. We make amazing websites, and I'll make you one for free. Just pay me, after I'm done, or pay me based on the people that come through the website." There's so many different ways you can take payment. And then you can use AI to make a website in 10 seconds once they agree. Say, "Hey, we can update it. You know, it's $1,000 for the website. And we can make an AI chatbot." You can stack those values. But so many things you can do. A lot of these business owners don't know how to use technology. They don't know how to use AI. And you can arbitrage that. The key is getting in front of them, and you can get in front of them by just using Google. And if you don't want to pay the $10, $15, $30 to scrape all the leads on Google Maps, then you could just go on Google Maps yourself, look them up, call them up. You got to be a hustler. Call them up, or you can email, or you can walk in and say, "Hey, my name is Roy. I looked at your website, and I think I can make a website and chatbot to make you more money. I'll do it for free. Can we just do a revenue share of 50-50 or 40-60 of everyone who comes through the chatbot?" And then from there, what are we talking about last episode? Volume. How can you scale that and do more and more and more and more? And that's just one of the ways that you can use the internet. You could be so creative.
Yeah. No, it's the possibilities are really endless.
Yeah.
Now, as I was hearing you speak, and you're mentioning some of these tools, obviously a lot of them come with like a subscription plan of some sorts, right?
Yep.
So I want you to talk about, especially for business owners, there's often this fear or this refusal to pay for some of these tools, right?
Yeah.
I want you to talk about the reason one would pay for these and the benefit that one would get from paying for these. Like, why shouldn't a business owner be afraid to spend $5.99 a month or whatever it is to, for example, scrape all the businesses in their area? Like,
yeah.
If you get what I'm trying to say.
Well, you want to look at this two ways. One, you want to test tools, and in testing them, you might lose a couple bucks in testing them. A lot of them say, we'll give it to you for free for a month or 2 weeks. You could use those to see if they work. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So if you're paying for a scraper, but you're actually getting sales, you're making money. It's fine. Pay it. Use it. But if you're using something that's not making you any money or getting you any attention, then ditch it. And it's really cool. In America, we do have a tax credit called R&D credit, where everything that you test in your business, testing this AI, testing this software, you can then write it off later. So that is one advantage we have. But if you want to use the tools that work, if the tool is $50 a month, but you actually hustled and you're making 10 grand a month off of what you're able to scale with it, then that's pennies compared to what you could make. So the thing is you don't want to get distracted with the tools. You want to use the tools to make actual money, to close actual deals. And if you see something in the tool where it's not going to make you any money, then ditch the tool and use something that's better. But there's going to be a season of figuring it out anytime you do anything. Like, I made it sound easy, and it is easy, but it may take you a month to get it to actually work, right? So there is a time lapse, and there's a learning curve, but it works, and you just got to figure it out.
100%. And I didn't know about that that tax credit that you mentioned. I actually wonder if we have that. You know, maybe I'll find out, but yeah, that's a good
Trump just made it more in the big, beautiful bill where you can, people can even go back to 2022 with their R&D credit. And, that's one of the things we do to get some liquidity out of the businesses we buy. If they didn't do R&D credit, we go do it and bring it back from 2022 and make some money.
That's nice. That's nice. But the next point I want to bring up is the business of podcasting, right? I mean, we're kind of doing a podcast right now, but for us, it's more like an informative kind of thing. How would you describe the podcast space as a business?
So, well, I was just talking about this with someone the day before yesterday. So a lot of people think, you just start a podcast, you get a lot of views, then you can get sponsors. Yeah, you can make money that way, but that's hard to do. It takes a lot of work, a lot of building an audience, a lot of maybe even spending money. Like, I spend a lot of money just promoting my YouTube on Google and different things, doing ads. But here's what you can also do. I have a podcast called Buy, Build, Exit, where I'm trying to buy businesses. I actually interview my customer. I interview the person I'm trying to buy their business. So I go out and I try to interview someone in my industry who is 67 years old or older, and I'm just interviewing them. Now, here's the key. Not only do I learn from them, now I have a connection with them, and everyone will go on a podcast. They want to talk. They want to, you know, teach. You can learn from them. Then you get their email, you get their name, and then you get connected. And so you could do a podcast with them 20, 30 minutes, an hour. And then after, you could say, hey, you ever thought about selling? Or, hey, I looked at your website. And then you can sell them from there. So you can interview your market. And then after you talk to them, say, hey, I think I can help you with this. You want to set up a meeting for after that? And they're like, sure. So that's another way you can make money with podcasts. This is a connection tool. Not only are you putting out a good, content and good educational content, you could chop it up and then put more content out there using Opus clips, but then you can also meet your market as well.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Now, I don't mean to keep bringing up speed, but to bring up speed again, right? I mean, I casually consume speed's content. I don't tune into the live streams, but you know, sometimes when I'm scrolling online or whatever, and I see a clip, I stop and watch, right? I want you to talk about the content that we consume online as people. You brought this up in our first episode a little bit about how, like, what you read and what you watch is like, trains your mind basically, right? So I want you to elaborate a bit more on that. Like, what are some pieces of content that you religiously tune into that help you, whether it's in your everyday life, whether it's in the world of business? Like, talk about that for a little.
So I watch a lot of a guy, his name is Dan Pena. He's P-E-N-A. He's the best at teaching people how to buy businesses. He's made with his students $1 trillion between his students. So I learned from his best student, which his name is Priest Whipple. That's who I learned from. I bought his course. I watch Dan all the time. He yells, he cusses, he's mad disrespectful, but he's so smart in business. He's so shrewd and he's so super confident. Also read a lot. I read at very minimum a book a
week. At ShopRite, we're helping you make your money go further with our wide range of back-to-school savings. Save big on essentials like big crystal ballpoint pens or variants for just $18.99, two per pack. 4 marks, 4-pocket school backpack or variants for only $119.99 each. And an 8-piece primary school stationery set or a 10-piece high school stationery set for a low $54.99 per set. Valid until 8 February 2026. Shop more. Back to school savings only at ShopRite.
I read at very minimum a book a week. Right now I'm reading Stalking the Wild Pendulum. It's a book on consciousness. You have to be
a full book a week.
A full book a week. Yeah. I can read really fast. I took a speed reading course. I can read a book in an hour or less, but you want to constantly be getting new information because ideas come from a flood of information, right? Get off of the blogs, stop watching shows, and we all love our movies, right? But trust me, the government and CIA, they put certain movies out there to put things in your brain, right? Like if you're here in America, every military show is someone who's Muslim doing a terrorist attack. That gets in your head. That gets in your head. And then when they go do mean things to Muslims, you think it's okay because you watch movies your whole life. Oh, Muslims are terrorists. That gets in your head. So your brain is a mental factory and whatever you put in, is what's going to come out. And the Bible says sowing and reaping. I like to say inputs and outputs. And so you want to control your inputs. Because that's how you get a hold of your outputs and how you're going to act into the world. So protect the door of your mind. Jim Rohn has this really cool analogy where he says, he would ask people, if your best friend put poison in your coffee and you drank it, what would happen? You would die, right? But if your worst enemy put sugar in your coffee and you drink it, you'll be fine. So what he says is, watch your coffee. Don't take people's intentions as truth. You have to really watch what's going into your mind. Is this helping me if I watch it? If you're watching movies, I like The Founder. I like the movie Tetris. I like the movie Blackberry. If you're in business, you need to be watching these movies. These are based on true stories, American made. And then you can really understand the psychology behind people.
No, that's great. I wanna rewind to what you said about reading a book a week.
Yep.
So 2026, we're what, 3 weeks in now?
Yep.
4 weeks now, it's 28th. We're on the 28th, 4 weeks in. So you've read 4 books this year?
Probably 8, 9.
8 books this year?
Yeah, I read a lot. I read a lot. Like this book, I haven't started. I'll be done with this. As soon as I pick it up, I'll be done with it. It's a quick read, but, I recommend everyone take a speed reading course. And then since I've written so many books, I know how books are written. So I go into a book, I can read the intro. I know where to go to get the information without reading a lot of fillers and stories and stuff like that. I know how to go exactly where I need to go to get the information. And what I do is I actually read it. And when I see things I'm learning or want to remember, I highlight it. And then later I go back and I take everything I highlighted and then I write it in my journal. And then I do have one gift that I was blessed with. Anything I write down, I can remember. So after I write it, I can remember it.
Yeah, I learned that from my dad too, because some of the books that I read, I got from like his personal collection. And like sometimes I'll see his little notes like in the book and whatever he highlighted. So yeah, that seems to be a universal thing.
Yeah.
What are some, if you can name maybe like two or three books that you've read this year that you've enjoyed? And before you answer that, what, like, how do you choose a book to read? And cause me, sometimes honestly, if I'm like in a library or something, I get really, distracted by like really like abstract books and whatnot. So how do you tell your mind like, okay, I need to pick up this book on, I don't know, business strategy or whatever, instead of the book about, you know, woolly mammoths and whatnot.
Yeah. So, Hende, that's actually a good question. Here's the thing. If you read something that you didn't understand, it wouldn't help you, right? You ever notice you only read things you understand? It's almost like reading pulls the information we already knew out and puts it in a way to where we can explain it consciously now, right? And it's weird. Books come to you that you need. They say when the teacher's ready, the student appears. I don't think we just randomly read books. I think the books come to us that we need at the time. And that's just my thoughts. But books that I've read, one is Cosmic Consciousness is a good one that I like. And that led me to reading a book called Ontological Math. And that led me to getting this book, Stalking the Wild Pendulum. And these are all books on consciousness and how consciousness works. There's a book called Confidential back here, written by a CIA agent on how CIA gets information out of people without asking them questions, which helps me a lot, in business deals, because I can get information I need, using techniques like, there's a technique called elicitation, where you can elicit people to tell you things that they usually wouldn't have told anyone and you didn't even have to ask them a question. There is, what else we got? There's another book called Outsmarting Reality. That's a really good book that I recently read. I read my Bible every night. I read Proverbs. If not at night, sometime in the day, I just read whatever day that is. So today I'll read Proverbs 28. That's what I could think of right now.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I want to have that wisdom.
Proverbs. That knowledge is in Proverbs. I want to piggyback of what you were saying about how we don't really read things that we don't understand. And I want to dive in a little deeper on that, because I feel like there's a thin line between like reading books to understand something new and then like reading a book to further understand something you already know. Like, can you talk about that balance? Like trying to find a book, maybe, let's take AI, for example. I mean, we weren't born understanding AI, right? But if I pick out a book about AI, I'm learning more about AI, I'm becoming more knowledgeable in AI. So how does one find that balance between finding a book or a piece of literature that will broaden your knowledge on something or something completely new, and choosing a book that about something that you already understand?
You can always find, so having a high IQ and being smart, what that is making finer and finer and finer distinctions, right? So being in the medical field, if I watch someone walk, I can tell you where they're weak, where they're strong. I could tell you what medical problems they have. I could tell you what medical problems they possibly could have in the future just by watching someone walk. So it's like the patterns, right? And so what happens with books is it gives you a little bit of the pattern so you can recognize them when you go into the real world. So what I do when I read a book is I'm constantly asking myself, how does this apply to me and how can I implement this in my business or in my life? Or does it apply to me, right? And so, for example, like I, you know, found out what the substance of reality is, right? And, that's like something like not telling nobody. Like it's like one of my secrets. CIA knows it. CIA, actually, they write about it. You can look it up online, MK Ultra, things of that sort. But dividing on the substance of reality. And now I'm reading the consciousness book. I'm trying to figure out how I can manifest and mold reality in my way, in the way I want it to. Right. And so I'm just constantly asking, how does this work? How can I implement it? Okay. What can I do in real life? Cause it doesn't matter if you can tell someone how to ride a bike. You want to actually be able to ride that bike. I want to actually be in business. I don't want to be like a business professor who tells you about international business who never went internationally to do a business, right? I don't want to be Martin Luther King's teacher who gave him an F in public speaking and he gave the best speech ever, right? So there's a big difference between knowing and doing. And so I'm trying to bridge that gap. How can I go from knowing this to doing it, right? And so the first thing I do is I read the top 5 books in it. And then I'm just like, okay, how can I apply that? What do I do? How does this apply to me?
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I don't know if in America they have this saying, but over here in Namibia, I think in Africa at large too, they say like, if you want to hide like knowledge or like real information from black people, like put it in a book, right? That's what they say over here.
My dad used to say that. My dad used to say that. Yeah. It's funny. Miami made me read this book called, Lord of the Flies. And then we're in the truck one day.
We read that at school.
Yeah. So we're in the truck one day and my dad was like, hey, if I dropped you on the island, how would you survive? And I'm like, well, first I would make a shelter, then I would build a fire, and then I would maybe hunt and figure out how I'm going to get some food. And he's like, how'd you learn all that? And I was like, oh, this book, Lord of the Flies. And he was like, do you see what books do for you? They can make you win. You survive. They can make you more capable. And then that's when it clicked for me. And then I started reading and I'm like, yo, they're putting secrets in here. Oh my gosh. He just told me how to guarantee I make $1 million in 7 years. What? But people don't read it. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. So now with that said, if for the people listening, if you were put on the spot to recommend one book, like the ultimate knowledge seeking book or knowledge providing book, what would it be?
We're going to take the Bible off of it because that would be it. Business or just knowledge in general?
Let's say one for each category. So one for business and one for knowledge in general.
Okay. So business, I'm going to say, gosh. I'm going to say the Harvard Business Review, buying a small business. Cause that's the industry I'm in. As far as like self-help, I'm going to say the book of Est. It's called the book of EST, the book of Est.
Okay.
If you read that book, it's a dialogue of a seminar they used to do here that they don't do anymore. If you understand everything in that book, you won't need another mental self-help book ever again. It's amazing. And then spiritual and philosophy. I'm going to say On the Way to Language by Martin Heidegger. He was a German philosopher who talked about how words construct our reality. And he was just amazing.
Roy, as I'm hearing you speak, like, obviously it comes through that you're a well-read person. How many books would you say you read in your life up to now?
I don't know. A couple thousand, probably.
A couple thousand books?
Yeah, probably a couple thousand.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That's pretty wild. Would you say you're, looking for the adjective, not superhuman, but yeah, would you say you're that?
Yeah, I'm a polymath. I like a lot of different things and I know a lot about a lot. I know a lot about a lot, but I'm not advocating for everyone to be that way, but I am really good at consuming a ton of information. And I'd have mm-hmm. this big curiosity. Like I gotta know. Like I hate not knowing something. Like when they're like, Delta Force went into, Tiznes Maduro. I'm like, well, how? But what? How did they plan it? And I'm reading everything. I'm trying to figure out. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Does this make sense? I just want to know. I'm one of those guys who I don't like not knowing.
Yeah. And I definitely feel you on that. Mm-hmm. And on the Maduro thing, side check now to our conversation, but did you, look into how they did that?
I did look into it. So, you know, with propaganda, the first thing is when it comes out, I'm like,
spend less and get more with budget beaters at WB. Get a 2-liter Rintain juice for only $36.99. 5 kg nice rice for just $87.99. 4 kg Kadila chicken portions for $189.99. And 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $57.99. See more month-end specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
The first thing is when it comes out, I'm like, first they give you a little bit of truth and a little bit of lie. So I'm just like, that ain't true. And then I start looking around. I start thinking, I'm like, Maduro probably made a deal and was like, all right, we're going to do this thing where it's like we captured you and then we're going to do a trial, but then we'll let you go and we'll let you live. I don't know. But at most likely they kind of gave up. It doesn't seem like there was any pushback. Like nobody got hurt. Like how? Then there was this son that they used some secret weapon, some secret cyber hypertonic weapon. And I'm like, maybe that's just to scare Putin. Like, oh, they got some weapon. There's a lot of war. It happens outside of war. It's a lot of talking and a lot of different things. So it's more than just, than what they say.
So you don't believe Trump when he said they used like technology they had never seen before, like it was over before it started type of thing. He was like, they couldn't do anything.
Here's how I think. It's possible, but not probable. So I put a probability percentage on everything. 20% I'll say 20%. Yeah, they maybe had some kind of special weapon, but I'm more 70-80% that maybe he just gave himself up and they just figured out a way and they've been planning this for a long time type of thing. And we're just going to make it look good and we'll make sure you're good. You're rich. Cause if you look at any of the wars, like all those German dudes from World War II, from those Nazis, they went to like Argentina and South America and they're down there chilling. There's no way they don't know that they're not down there. Like, if they really cared, like they say, they would go finish that, you know? But I think it's kind of like, all right, you lost. All right, let's come with a deal. All right, we're going to say you killed yourself and then you can leave to this country and just never do this again. Like, I think they're more diplomatic than they pretend to be.
I got you. All right, Roy, before we get too sidetracked and I take up too much of your time, so it's been another great edition of Business with Roy. I'm glad we got to connect one more time and that the listeners are really taking the gems that you dropped today. I think you dropped more gems than you did on the first one.
And we saw more.
We got more coming, definitely, for sure. And thank you once again for your time, and we'll be back same time, same place next week.
All right, guys. See you next week.